Welcome back. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. Love starting interviews with little Bob Marley when the sun is shining.
You betcha.
Because you know what happens when the sun is shining?
We eat a lot.
Well, you may eat a lot when the sun is shining or when it's not shining. No, that's, to grow nature's food.
Sure.
That's key. And let's welcome our guest. We've got Aaron Anker here. He is the Chief Granola Officer with Grandy Oats Business. Grandy Oats, you've got granola. You have other snacks. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thanks so much, Steve. I'm so happy to be here. This is a blast.
Yeah, it's great having you here. And you know what? I don't know if we should be encouraging guests more often to bring things, but Aaron brought some very, very cool Grandy Oats sunglasses. He bought a whole portfolio of their tasty products. And Sully, if there's some way that you can put that into the guest thing, bring a book, bring food,
the small print.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to be overt about it. You want it to be kind of natural, but having all this delicious, Grandy Oats, real granola, coconut and fruit granola, I may eat the whole bag before we're done. It is outstanding. So before we get going, I want to talk about, here in Maine, we have such a relatively weak economic engine. So anytime any entrepreneur, anyone starts a business and works hard at it, particularly if it's a healthy, really positive business, which I believe yours is, I think it's both fascinating and I think it's great for the state, and I want to talk about that. But just before we do that, why don't you talk just for a couple minutes about your background and how you ended up here in Maine, and then we'll talk about the company and the products.
Yeah, sure. So much of my story is about Maine, and there's parts of my life that I kind of thing pointed for me moving here in 1998. But prior to that, I grew up in upstate New York. I was a foodie at birth. My grandfather, who was my idol and somebody I just adored, owned his own fish fry. So I grew up in the restaurant business. It was the kind of place where, you came in and he knew your name and would tell you the latest joke that he'd come up with. And he was just such a character. And of course, he made delicious food, so people always wanted to come. And I love that feeling, and as you talked about me bringing food here, I mean, I think I carry that through my life now, and I think food is such an essential part of who we are as people, and it often identifies what we care about, and it's around family and so many different things. So I think being a foodie has always been part of my life. I beyond that, I went to school at University of New Hampshire and was kind of lost in the business school, and then found out that they had one of the best hotel restaurant management programs in the country. So getting involved in that really, inspired me to get back into the restaurant business. After a few years in the restaurant business, I realized as much as I loved it, it's a tough life. You're working a lot of weekends, you're working a lot of holidays. And I realized a lot of the people that I liked in the industry were the people that were coming in there and selling me stuff, whether it was a wine salesperson or whoever it was. And they were just very personable people, and I thought I'd get into that. So moving back I just spent some time in Baltimore in hotel world. I spent some time in Colorado managing a vegan bistro. People often ask me if I'm vegan or vegetarian. I always say I did it for about three double shifts in a row. And then I wanted to steak. But I did learn a lot about the health food industry at that point. You can imagine people out in Aspen, Colorado are pretty healthy. And this restaurant was very, very – we made incredible food, and it was a great place. Moved back here, moved to Maine, really. And I mean, I'd spent a summer in Maine in Booth Bay in 93 for like a summer internship, and just fell in love with Maine. It's so beautiful. The people are so cool. And it's what I find is it's such an interconnected state. And so when I moved back here in 98, I was lucky to get a job with Fresh Samantha through a friend of a friend. And it was when, Fresh Samantha was just starting to boom. A lot of people remember them in the 90s. And when I came in, there were, not quite $8 million in sales. And when I left 2 years later, we were at $38 million in sales. And, around that same time was when they were merged with Odwalla and ultimately bought by Coca-Cola. And for myself, I looked at it. A lot of people were pretty burned by it. For myself, I learned it as it was like grad school for me. I learned so much. It was an incredible group of people that I got to work with. I was going up and down the East Coast helping develop new markets, hiring people for the sales reps positions. And, I realized that I had a lot to offer. And look, I got an incredible opportunity because I called my buddy Nat Purse up, a good friend from college, and said, hey, listen, I'd like to sell your products, and I think I'm going to approach some other main companies and become a broker and sell products around the East Coast. I now know how to do it, and would you be interested? And Nat said, don't do that. He's like, why don't you become my partner? And for me, I mean, I always wanted to own my own business. I love food, as I've already talked about, and Nat was such a nice guy. We just had to figure out how we would do it, and it's been great because he runs the operations. I do the sales and marketing, and it's really a marriage. We're 50-50 in partnership. A lot of people chuckle when I say that, but anybody that's married understands you've got to agree on things. I mean, not always, and usually it's sort of a passionate discussion, and somebody's got to be a little bit giving here and there. But most of the time, Nat and I agree, and when we don't, we discuss it. We have an honest conversation. Neither of us let our egos get too involved, and we both know we're going for the common cause of growing the business. And now we've got 21 fantastic people we get to work with. So certainly don't want to just give the credit to Nat and I. We've got a great team. It's awesome.
So did Nat? Was he the original founder at the time? Was it Grandiotes, or was it called something else as a organic food company?
Yeah, no, it was called Grandiotes, and it's kind of a cool story. Nat was running a cafe in Bridgeton. It was above the bookstore. If anybody knows Bridgeton, it's
right by the lake there.
Yeah, right by the lake there, not too far from Rennie's and the Magic Lantern movie theater there. And so he had a cafe, and he kind of did the same thing that I was doing. He's in a cafe, and he's like, wow, you know, wholesale would be kind of cool. And he started making some granola. One of the customers said, hey, you know, your granola is great, but there's this granola company up in Farmington, Maine. These two women own it, and they're looking to sell, and they're looking for the right, let's put it this way, granola to buy it. And at this point, Nat had hair down to his knees, pretty full beard, and he looked about as, you know, granola hippie as you could get.
That's the right look,
right?
For granola.
Absolutely.
In fact, both of you guys look very earthy and crunchy and natural, right?
I mean, that's the idea, and it's really fun. I mean, I'll just briefly go into, we did a rebrand about 2 years ago, and our brand wasn't saying who we were, and there's a lot of, let me just put it this way without being negative. When you go into a grocery store, there's a lot of authenticity out there.
Right.
So there's a lot of brands that aren't even really making their product, right? There's what they call co-packing out there. Somebody else comes with a brand and somebody else makes it for them. And we are authentic, and we just wanted to say that. So we hired a great company here in Portland, Maine, Pulp and Wire. And Taja and Katie Bernier.
Taj Dockin, Dorf, is that her name?
I don't try. I just call her Taja because she likes that. She's awesome. She's
and when you familiar. Have a first name like Taja, you don't need a last name.
You don't. But she's Taja. Got a fantastic team. And we said to her, I said, look, we're the real deal. You know, tell us, you know, what, have some fun with this brand. Tell us what you think we should do. And she came up with the term real granolas and using that double entendre. I mean, I have a VW 76 VW bus. My business partner Nat's had a 74 for close to 30 years. Mine's, I guess, I'm 27 years I've had it. So, you know, my license plate is granola. A lot of people just think I'm doing a kind of goof on being a granola, but I also own a granola company. So
Right. We're
really kind of owning that and just saying, look, we are what we are, and be proud of it. Some people say, well, what is a granola? You know, and we're still defining that. We're kind of having fun with that. Does it mean you eat healthy? Does it mean, we think it means that you care about what's going on in this earth. We talk a lot about environmentalism. I'm sure we'll talk about more of that today. You know, and we also believe it's caring about what you put in your body. We also feel very strongly about organic foods and how they don't affect the environment is, you know, as much as the pesticides and the rest. And so, you know, it's really try to embody the brand, live the lifestyle, and without being too preachy. You know, we try to, you know, nobody likes that person that's preaching to them. And so we try to be a bit reverent with it, have some fun. I mean, we've got a tagline that we often throw around that is, my nuts are organic, you know, and it's like, why not? Let's laugh about this, right? So,
yeah.
You know, we also once in a while will say Bakes in 79. So to answer your question, the women that started at Sarah and Penny, they started in 1979. Nat bought the business for them in 97. And then I joined them in 2000. But basically since 2000, and not taking all the credit for it, but because Nat and obviously the rest of the team, but that's when we really ramped it up. So Nat kept it kind of at the same stage for about 3 years, really refined the processes, and over the last 16 years, we've been building it up and having fun.
And what was the history of the name Grandiotes? And then talk a little bit about where the business is located, and probably want to back up at one point
sure,
and describe I think everyone's familiar with granola, whether you're actively eating it. My daughter loves these things called acai bowls, and yeah. She went to school out in Santa Barbara. And
sure.
A lot of trends start in California.
Yeah.
And she uses granola in the acai bowls.
Yeah, those are great.
But what is granola? So let's talk about, where the business is and
sure.
where you're based in the barn, which I think is interesting. And then to inform our listeners, we have Aaron Anker here. He is one of the two head Freds at Grandy Oats. And talk a little bit about both the business and then what granola is.
Sure. Happy to do that. So, Grandy Oats, first off, to how the name came up, as I understand it from Sarah and Penny, and we still do keep in touch now and then with those guys. Great people. Really proud of what we've done with the business. The Grandy Oats it was a grandiose idea to start a granola company. And a bunch of people helped come up with a name. And honestly, that's how we still come up with flavor names. We kind of throw it out to friends and family, but that's how they came up with it. We've loved the name. We've kept it that way. We've tweaked the logo a couple times since when they first started, but it's still the same thing. Our classic granola, which was the original recipe from 1979, is not changed at all. The only thing that we've done is made it 100% organic. And that we did that after the USDA organic standards came out in the early 2000s.
Do you look at other brands like Ben & Jerry's, who literally and figuratively have taken kind of an organic path in the way they name different ice creams, and they have an ethos that is really core? Do you look at companies benchmarks?
I'm a huge fan of reading, meeting other entrepreneurs, reading about other entrepreneurs, meeting. I've got a lot of friends that are entrepreneurs. Met Tom Chappell a few times, great guy.
Yeah.
I met Gary Hirschberg from Stonyfield, consider these guys, just mentors if I could. Ben and Jerry's, I've never met Ben or Jerry. I've read some of their books. Certainly those guys did some great things, the brand continues to do some good things. So yeah, I like that. I mean, one of the things that we've done a bit different is that we haven't taken any outside capital. And so Nat and I own the whole company, which, at this point we've built a really, nice business, and we're trying to take it to the next level while retaining that ownership. And to me, that was the biggest challenge in the early years. Now we are profitable, so we take those profits and reinvest it in the business. So, that's one of my prouder achievements, the further I get along in the business. And I realize, and it's not to knock anybody for taking outside equity. A lot of my friends have done it and either built it up and given dividends to their investors or sold. It's just a path that we like to take. And for us, it was a lot about quality of life. And, when both Nat and I had our kids and we were younger, we couldn't work as hard. You got to share the responsibilities as a modern dad and wanted to. So that's, what we do. As far as granola, I think you asked me about, what is granola? Granola was created in the early 1900s by Graham, actually. And it was basically like a healthy cereal, something to start off. And there's a lot of different ways you can do granola. Mostly it's toasted oats with nuts and fruits. That's the simplest definition of granola. The one that you're holding is our muesli. Now, muesli is an interesting one, and it's got a lot of popularity. Generally, it's more of a European style of, you would call it maybe like a granola. The difference, though, in it is the oats are generally not toasted in a muesli. Ours it's basically raw oats. It's got a bunch of different fruits and nuts in it. You do have to roast the nuts just so that they don't go bad. But where muesli has become real popular lately is people doing an overnight soak. And your daughter might know about that one too, because that's a lot of people do that in California, all over the world, to be honest with you. But what you do with that is the night before, you can soak it with any kind of milk that you like or apple juice. I even like to do it with coconut water.
See, I thought you were talking about the person soaking overnight.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool, too. You could do both.
You could do
it in a bowl of muesli.
California is a perfect place just to get a hot tub and do the overnight soak, but you were talking about the granola soaking. Got it.
Yeah, no, see, what you do is, and this is, for those that are maybe more organized than me, I'll even just do it in the morning right before I hop in the shower or whatever. But what you do, and it's really not one of those exact sciences, but we do have recipes on our website, and I've got one here for you, Steve-O. And you basically go sort of one-to-one. We do it often with almond milk, and that's been really healthy. One of the nice things about muesli, it does not have any sugar at all in it. And all of our granolas, for that matter, we don't put any sugar at all. We either sweeten with honey, maple syrup, right here from Maine, the maple syrup. And some once in a while, we use fruit juice or agave in some of our recipes. So.
Wow. Yeah. So talk about the business in terms of how many employees and where you have distribution. Looks like you have some distribution with Whole Foods and Hannaford and some other co-ops.
Yep.
And talk about the manufacturing process and what kind of challenges and what type of success you've had doing that here in Maine.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as the retailers, we got some great partners out there. I mean, I'll first talk about some of the local, health food stores when I first started with Nat that we sold to. Some of the first ones would be, the small health stores, the Lois is Naturals of the world, Belfast Co-op, Rising Tide Co-op, and Damariscotta. Now we sell to roughly 150 co-ops around the country.
Wow.
We sell to over 300 Whole Foods around the country. Hannaford was one of our first customers when Nat and I first partnered, and we're in about 150 Hannafords, both with our package products and also our bulk products. We sell to Wegmans, which is a great family-owned company out of Rochester, New York. We go through them all the way down to D.C. We have a lot of independents, too many to name here. We've just opened the West Coast up with distribution. We distribute through United Natural Foods, which is the largest natural foods distributor in the country. We've got a lot of different outlets. We're also doing a lot in the university and restaurant world these days. So we're working with great companies in Maine. You might know PFG North Center. We also work with Cisco, Northern New England. It was another great company. We've got Native Maine locally here. So we've got a lot of great distributors that are servicing food service. We're in camps at this point. And that's been a great brand extension for us. We really like that.
Have you talked to Pine State?
Yeah, I know the family. They're really good people. It just hasn't we're going to start working on, and the new facility, which I'd love to talk a little bit about,
sure.
We'll have more room to do more grab and go. And that's where those guys really prosper when they're doing more of that
store stuff.
Exactly. And... when we're doing a lot more in the larger size bags or food service, it hasn't been perfect for them. But that's a great company, of course.
What about online? What about selling through that distribution channel?
Yeah, we do well on online. It's not as big a segment as I'd like it to be. Pulp and Wire just did revamp our website this past year. We are going to be putting some more effort into that, more ads, obviously. Getting on the radio here with you, I'd love to tell people go to our website. It's probably the best way to buy our product.
Sure, it's grandiotes.com, and you're also very active in social media at Grandiotes for both Twitter and Instagram, and also Facebook /Grandiotes, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I mean, one of the things we do on the website, and my thought on this, and love your thought on this, Steve, but is look, if you want to buy 13 ounces of granola, that's a great thing to go do at Hannaford or Whole Foods or some of our other retailers. But if you want to buy it in bulk, and and generally people have a sort of ritual for breakfast, they do a very similar thing. At least a few days a week, they're doing the same thing for breakfast. So what we do online is we sell 3-pound bags of our granola, and right. People can put it in a big ball jar or Tupperware container of their choice. And so we really try to promote that on our website, and you get it really quick. So within New England, you're going to get it 24 hours after we bake it. So it's super fresh, great way to buy the product. But that way we also don't compete with our retailers too.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So talk about the production process. You mentioned baking, and since each of these different extensions, from coconut and fruit to Swiss style to blueberry, they're different components. They're from nuts to fruit. How what kind of challenges and what type of setup do you have for production, and where do you do your packaging?
Yeah, so we do everything at our facility. Right now, we are in Brownfield, Maine. We've been there about 15 years. We've got a dairy barn that we rehabbed, and it's a fantastic place. But if anybody's ever lived in an old house, it's kind of a love hate. It's romantic, it's cute. We used to have it on our packaging. It looks great, but it's an old barn, and it's clean. We've got it all good, perfect place to make the product. But it's quirky. There's beams in the wrong places or that kind of thing. So just recently we bought an elementary school in Hiram, Maine, and we're revitalizing that. We'll be moving in this next month. We're super excited about that. I'll talk about that in a second. But as far as the production, we do everything in 50-pound batches. We've looked at streamlining of production. A lot of our competitors, even friendly competitors out there, use large mixers, around 350-pound mixers. What we've found is the integrity of the product doesn't hold up. I mean, if you're looking at our product or any of the people on the radio, when you buy our product, you'll notice that the oats are whole. They're not all pulverized or they're not all clustered together. And that's because we mix it by hand. And we do the same with our trail mixes. We do that also with our roasted nut products. We've always done that. And our theory is we'd rather hire people than machines. And it's that simple. And I think some of it's Nat and I's conservativeness in terms of spending too much money and buying machines that might not be necessary for it at a certain point. But it's really great. I mean, we've got great people out in Western Maine that are looking for good work, and we pay them a good living wage and give them benefits, and it's been great. So, look, we're moving to this new facility. We are, buying some fancier vacuum sealers, that kind of thing, but we're still mixing everything by hand.
Wow. And by the way, I love your packaging.
Hey, thanks.
It's, for listeners, you need to go out and buy Grandiose, but let me describe it. The packaging both is, at the same time, it looks contemporary and fresh, but it also looks authentic because as a natural organic product, you want to really kind of convey the authenticity. And you have, it looks like about a 1 or 2 inch clear see-through band where not only can people see and interact with the information and the logos and the packaging, but you can actually see the product without having to guess what each flavor looks like. So, and I think one of our folks here at TideSmart, Heather Bernier, her sister Katie, had something to do helping with some of the packaging design, right?
For sure. Katie works at Pulp and Wire with Taja, and she's been fantastic. She's an excellent artist. Did such a great job pinpointing our brand along with Taja, and continues to. We're redesigning our trade show booth that we're going to be going out to Anaheim at Natural Products Expo West. So she's done a great job. They help with our T-shirts, and they've been fantastic. I think they really nailed the packaging. And we're always up for comments. One of our buyers, that Whole Foods down in Boston, came back to us, and we originally had just plain colors, and he's like, we'd done a bag with our main grown oats, which is another project I'd love to talk about. But on that, we had a picture of the farm where we get our oats from up in Holton, and he's like, that looks really cool. Why couldn't you guys do that on the granola packages too? So you'll see on our classic granola, you've got a picture of my 76 VW bus on the top of Hogback Mountain in Vermont. If anybody's ever driven on Route 9, they know that view. It's a beautiful one. And, the Swiss style muesli is actually a farm in Maine. And then, we got the coconut with fruit is my partner Nat's favorite picture. That's a picture of Scarborough Beach. And actually, Nat grew up on Scarborough Beach. And he snapped that picture last year, and we put it on the package. So we really, we wanted to just give them life. I mean, packaging's it's a tough thing, and you're trying to, in a short amount of space, tell your story. You can do it on a radio show, but it's hard to do it on a package.
But it's both art and science. The science part is you have to convey a lot of both technical information and required information, but it's also art. And one element I like, and I think other brands have done it successfully, I think Nantucket Nectar and a few other, but on each package, you have what you refer to as granola wisdom little sayings. So on this one, it says, granola wisdom number 41, the purest pleasures are found off the beaten path. Makes sense. Granola wisdom 37, machines couldn't care less about their work. Really kind of conveying the brand attribute that everything that goes into this is human enterprise and human effort.
Yeah.
And granola wisdom number 11, which is one of my personal mantras, Mother Nature doesn't need any makeup.
I like that one.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite one, yeah.
And as Deb, I
don't need any.
I do not. No. I do not need any makeup. We have Aaron Anker here. He is the chief granola officer, one of the partners and founders of Grandiose. Their website is grandiose.com. Talk a little bit about the whole segment, because your packaging also includes a USDA organic seal and non-GMO project verified.
Sure.
So talk about the organic category, not just in terms of oats, but also in terms of, there are some guys in Maine doing red bars, which are kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. We've talked to them recently. But whether it's in bars, whether it's in granola, whether it's in drinks, it feels like it partly is a generational thing where people are getting more aware, more sensitive, more educated about, the fuel we put in our bodies is critical, not just to fuel our bodies, but for life and mental health and physical health. But where do you see from your time, in this category, both where it's been, where it's at, and where is it going? The whole idea of people being more into organic.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the healthier eating and for that fitter lifestyle, I think it's a trend. It's not a fad. I mean, you can see it. I can see it in my lifetime how much healthier people are trying to be. You can see it just infused through so much of our society. And you can see it just look through the economics. You know, Whole Foods is, I think, at 500 stores at this point in the nation. And then you've got companies like Costco, or you've got companies like Hannaford or Wegmans, as I mentioned earlier, that are having these large natural food sections. They're not doing it just because it looks good. They're doing it because it sells. People are trying to eat healthier and trying to live a healthier lifestyle. I can tell you, when I first started in partnership with Nat, one of the people I know in the industry kind of challenged me and said, "Really? I mean, you know, are you sure you want to get into this?" And my take on it was, absolutely. This trend is not going anywhere. You know, and for that matter, I feel the same way about gluten-free. A lot of people have felt that that's a fad. For Nat and I, you know, in our new facility, we'll have a gluten-free section. You know, there's a lot. It's not the majority of people, but there are a lot of people that are eating that way. And it is certainly a nice differentiator. So a couple of our products will be gluten-free. We're not going to be a gluten-free company like there are some out there that are exclusively that. But I think that there are certain trends within the health food industry that can't be ignored. As far as the non-GMO and organic, I'm passionate about organic. And for me, I actually come at it. What we hear is the consumers look at it more from their own. They're more concerned about their own well-being. And a lot, they don't want to put the pesticides in their bodies and the chemicals that are put on their, whether it's their vegetables or fruits, or in our case, the greens or nuts and fruits and seeds. For me, I certainly do care about my body and my kids and of course our customers, but I also come at it from an environmental standpoint. And to me, when you look at what's going on, let's use the Mississippi River, for instance, because there's so many you know, chemicals going down the Mississippi River. And then if you've ever seen that overhead shot, that satellite shot of the Mississippi Delta, where there's just so much nitrogen in the water that it, you know, they're getting these incredible algae blooms and that kind of thing. That to me is just really scary. And I get nervous that, you know, you can't hit the rewind button on our Mother Earth. And so I look at organic farming as a much more sustainable way of us farming and growing. And I like that our business and other businesses can get a premium on it, paying the farmer more for it. And it just makes to me so much more sense. And I'm glad to see our country and for that matter, the European Union is doing a lot more with organics too, and in a lot of ways further ahead of us. In fact, on the GMO thing, the European Union now basically says that all genetically modified ingredients need to be labeled as such. Let the consumer make the decision. So on the ingredients, it might say genetically modified corn in Europe, and you can decide whether that's good or bad for you. In our country, we don't do that. We put the onus on the companies like ourselves to say that we're non-GMO.
Hasn't there been a lot of legislation but pushback from the big companies? And
absolutely.
I don't know if it's Monsanto, but I am with you there on GMOs, maybe with one exception. I mean, who doesn't like a watermelon without seeds?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
You know, the pesticides thing and some of the, you know, the other genetics. But if we were going to keep one item,
yeah,
the watermelon, the seedless watermelon, feels like, yeah, you know, it's doing pretty well.
Well, I'm with you on that one. And hey, look, broccoli is actually something that was created in a lab, and a lot of people don't know that. It's across, I believe, between cauliflower and I think it might be spinach, or I can't remember what it was. But that's different. That's when you're not taking a gene and splicing it, and I'm not a scientist here,
right,
but genetically modified, a lot of this stuff is irreversible, because what you have is a Monsanto-created seed that gets out in the environment, whether it's through a bird eating it or whether it's through wind, and it's adulterating other people's crops. I mean, I went to a fantastic farm in Minnesota, I'll tell you a quick story about, where it was this great family-owned farm. They had 100 acres, and they were milling and growing all their grains. So whether it was oats or wheat or whatever, and there was, imagine this country driveway that's maybe 12 feet wide that you would drive down between them and their neighboring farm. And the neighboring farm had literally advertising signs that said Monsanto corn. There's no way that corn, and anybody that's been in the Midwest and seen the corn blow in the wind, which is a beautiful sight, there's no way that those are not going to be affecting the other crops and their neighbors. And that's where I really have a problem with it. And I think it's one of those things where look, I grew up near the Hudson River. You know, it's pretty obvious. Everybody knows GE and some other companies polluted the hell out of the Hudson River. They've actually been able to dredge and clean up. The Hudson River is way cleaner than it was, you know, 50, 60 years ago. The problem with genetically modified things is you can't hit that. Once those seeds get into the environment,
right,
there's just no way. And I just believe, look, let the consumer make those decisions. And that, so I'm hoping that we do have some labeling laws here. Vermont's passed a law, and Maine is basically said if the rest of the five contiguous states in New England – pass it, then they'll pass it. So they kind of copped out, to be honest with you. But, you know, hey, it's a little bit of a step forward. For us, one thing I do want to just mention is if you are organic, you are genetically modified, you're GMO-free. We put the double verification on there. To be honest with you, it was a real pain to do. It's a lot of money, a lot of time to do it.
So they're two separate organizations. USDA is a government Yeah. organization, and then this other organization, non-GMOproject.org, is probably more of a group or a...
You got it. It's a third-party certifier. The thing is that for consumers, a lot of people don't know this, and this is why I take the opportunity to educate your listeners, is that if you're USDA organic, you are genetically, you're GMO-free. And organic's better than GMO. If you just see GMO-free there, don't assume it's organic. Organic's the best.
Organic covers both, whereas GMO only covers the dimension of GMO.
Yeah, and there's only seven ingredients right now that are genetically modified, and I'll probably forget them right now, but they're because I'm on the spot, right? But you know, you're looking at corn, alfalfa. There's like papayas from Hawaii, soy. What else am I figuring?
Wheat.
No, not wheat yet. Now, at this point, they're starting to play around with wheat, and people are concerned by it, but there isn't like one that's mass widely produced. So, you know, we don't have any corn or soy. Those are the two big ones in any of our products. So we actually don't have any ingredients in there. So that's the other thing. If you really want to stay GMO-free, just pay attention to your corn, your soy, your alfalfa. You know, the sugar beets is the other one. There's another one, and I can't remember. I think I'm forgetting one.
No worries. Why don't you talk a little bit? We have Aaron Anker here. He is Chief Granola Officer at Grandy Oats, which is a Maine-based company that's doing great. Talk a little bit about where the ingredients come from and how many of the ingredients in the different products you have right now come directly from Maine and what your position is on local sourcing. Are you able to get everything or do you have to go outside of Maine for some things?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say I'm an idealist here, but I'm also a businessman and more of a realist, you know. So unfortunately, Maine is a northern climate. We just don't grow that many things, right? So I'm passionate about local foods long before there was even the term localvore or, you know, it was an in vogue thing to do. We do get oats grown here in the state of Maine. My quick story on that is we years ago, I called my buddy Jim Amaral from Borealis Breads, who really was a pioneer of getting grains grown in the state of Maine. Started putting wheat in his breads back in 2000. And I said, Jim, can't we grow some oats here? And he put me in touch with his friend Matt Williams up at Aurora Mills in Holton. And Matt grew some oats for us for the Common Ground Fair in 2001. We got about 100 pounds that we got. The next year, we got about 1,000 pounds, and we just started using them at the Common Ground Fair. Each year, we got more and more. This year, I'm proud to say that we are buying and selling over 4,000 pounds a month from Aurora Mills. We are very transparent about that. We look at it as a partnership with them. We now serve our oats. We're sort of the marketing sales agency for them because they're too busy milling and farming the product, and we're happy to help them at Boston University, University of New Hampshire, and we also sell them at local health food stores in a 3-pound package. So that's been a great local project. Our maple syrup. We get from either Maine or Vermont. We actually use a maple syrup co-op, and they try to get it from Maine for us, but they're out of Vermont. They process actually in Vermont. For years, we were using a Maine supplier, but they just couldn't keep up with our demand. But beyond that, it's really hard. I mean, our cranberries we get from Eastern Canada, our blueberries we get from Eastern Canada, so that's pretty darn close. Our oats come from the Midwest, so either North Dakota or Saskatchewan. because we can't use the mangrove oats in our granolas because these are 36-year-old recipes. And it's a different oat, but I got to tell you, the mangrove oats are a delicious oatmeal, fantastic oatmeal.
Yeah, so, I wasn't familiar that you had an oatmeal. I was familiar with granola, but what are they called? 1 cup servings where you just basically add the hot water right to the cup?
Yeah, those are good. That's been a great brand extension. We started that a few years ago. That's the kind of thing where you'll find at local coffee shops. A lot of universities like Dartmouth has those on campus in their library cafe. That's been really fun for us. It's nice brand extension, really simple product. And if there's one product that kind of sums up our mantra about food, you know, we were looking at oatmeal and I got to tell you a quick story. I brought it into L.L. Bean cafeteria and they put this next to the Kashi oatmeal, opened up the Kashi one and it was just a bunch of dust. And then they opened ours up and it's full of oats and it's got only three other ingredients, apples, cranberries, and raisins. More than 35% of the ingredients are fruit. And Nat and I looked at it, I'm like, why complicate it? It's just freaking oatmeal.
Right.
You know, if you want to add milk, you want to add sugar to it, go for it. Sometimes I'll put a little maple syrup in there. Sometimes I don't put anything in there. There's enough fruit in there that's sweet. It's quite sweet, but some people like a sweeter thing. And I think that's the thing, what's going on with people's diets these days. And I'm sure you see it with your friends and family. People are they're customizing their diets. You know, they want to know that they can just do whatever the heck they want to do with something. And that's what we're finding with granolas too. You know, you don't want to get too fancy with them. You want to let people do what they want to do. And if they want to put acai or chia or whatever the heck they want to do with them, let them do it. And that's that's the beauty of our society now. We have those luxuries. So.
Deb, Sully, have you guys ever had an acai bowl?
No.
Do you know what it is?
I honestly don't even know what it is.
God, the market's so open here in Maine. You can't go, you know, one block in Southern California without having these acai bowl cafes where it looks like, you know, it's heavily fruit-based and it's frozen. And then you put in granola and then mix it up. And Cammy makes this huge one every night. And it's like...
Do you eat the bowl itself?
No.
Well, you said it was fruit-based.
Well, no, bowl isn't fruit-based.
So the best way to describe it is it's almost like a thick smoothie that you would pour into a bowl, right?
So an
acai is a Brazilian superfruit. And so it's a Brazilian thing that with a couple... I actually know a couple of the guys that brought it really to the States And they, you know, brought it to California, a bunch of surfer guys, basically. It's just super good fuel for an active lifestyle. Hmm. And the granola on top of that. I do it all the time. And whether it's acai or you can use blueberries here in the state of Maine, one of my favorite breakfasts is I'll make a smoothie with really whatever I want to do. Sometimes I do mango, sometimes it's blueberries, whatever. And then I pour the granola right on top, whether you do it right in your glass or in a bowl. It's delicious. Mm. It just gives you a little texture. Because I don't know about you, but I like to eat my breakfast. Sometimes I don't like to drink my breakfast. Right. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that do, but I like a little bit of chewiness.
Well, how about we open up an acai cafe down in the Old Port? What do you say?
Let's try it.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we get off the air. Boy, this is the new business incubator right here.
It is.
We talk, these guys have the granola. Mm-hmm. I have my daughter's recipe. No, I've got my daughter's recipe. By the way, Aaron Anchor's here. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. Talk a little bit about the ethos of the company, Grandiose, both from your packaging and the product, but really interested in when you guys are moving to the school, the old school building. I've got it written here that you installed 288 solar panels. So obviously you care about the environment. Obviously with all your products being organic, that's something that's kind of key. Is you and your partner, Nat, have built the business. How has environmental issues, sustainability issues, how you treat employees, all that stuff, aside from having great products that taste great, so you have the intrinsic product value is here, but what's been your philosophy as you've grown the business, wanting to kind of stay true to kind of the ideals you have and kind of the philosophy you have?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's my business is an extension of who I am. And of course, being Nat's my partner of who he is. And I just feel that you should walk the talk in life, right? And so it's almost as deep as that. And then as you get to become more and more entrenched in your business and it becomes more of a extension of your personality, I think it becomes easier for that brand to embody who we are as people. And it's not just Nat and I anymore. It's the rest of the crew. We run it through the filter of our team that we love. And I think that when we were faced with where we were going to move specifically, because I think that so much talks about who Nat and I are, you know, we're pressed right up against the New Hampshire border right now in the barn. We're about a half mile from the Mount Washington Valley and from the New Hampshire border. And so we were looking at it. And whenever you're moving, you kind of draw that intrinsic circle around where you're at. And we had to cut off half that circle because we really didn't want to move to New Hampshire. We love Maine. It's a big portion of our brand. And then we looked around and we really didn't want to steamroll a bunch of trees and build a box, if you will.
Right.
And so we looked around and we found this elementary school. And a lot of people remember the consolidation of schools in Maine. And so you found this building that was otherwise going to be a blight in the community. It sat on 8.5 acres and it had over 400 feet in the Saco River. And we thought, wow, that sounds pretty cool. And so not only does it sound like a really cool place to work, but geez, that fits the brand, and we don't have to steamroll a bunch of trees. And then, you know, Nat early on, within the first weeks of finding, he said, you know, maybe we could put solar in that field. You know, so we called up our friends. Once we bought the property, we called up our friends at Revision, and they said, yeah, you know, you've got an opportunity here because—
Do you know Phil Coop at Revision?
I do, yeah. Phil's actually who came up and saw us. Yeah, Phil's a great guy.
And again, we're talking about granola today, but I'm also friends with Phil Coop, and not only is he one of the owners of Revision, which I think is really kind of the number one solar provider here in Maine, but they're expanding out all over New England, but he really believes it. He believes it with the electric vehicle he has. He believes it with—
That's that walk in the talk.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there's a handful of people who are really walking the walk, talking the talk. Phil Coop is one of them. So Revision.
You know, I'll tell you, for me, it was a lot about who we are and that, something Nat and I had always wanted to do. It needs to make sense. You know, look, and I'll speak as a businessman for a second. When we looked at this facility, you know, it had been abandoned for about 6 years. So the steam pipes and you had these old big radiator, you know, that we probably all remember from elementary school that you kind of push your chair up against and go, burn yourself or whatever.
Right.
At least my school had one of those. Anyway, so these things were old and archaic. And so we were faced with, like, all right, what do we do here? And Phil, you know, said to us, gosh, you guys could completely get rid of petroleum on your facility. And right now we've got gas ovens. So, kerosene heaters and propane ovens. And so when we looked at things, we thought, oh, wow, you know, actually electric ovens are more efficient. We can get an electric forklift and we can, you know, with the great heat pumps there are out there now. So we put in, you know, heat pumps in, and for the cooling of our product, that's all connected through the heat pump. So,
Wow. Yeah,
so we've got 100% electric power there, and we designed a system that would be net zero. And in fact, we said to Phil and Phil Coop and Revision Energy, say, hey, design this thing for 3 times our capacity, because if I'm going to go out there and say we're net zero, let's do this. And then the challenge was, and I think Phil thought I was crazy, but I said, no, we're gonna finance this. I said, we're gonna talk to Bangor Savings, who's been a great local partner of us, and so we're gonna sell it to him, and we're gonna teach Bangor why this makes sense. And you and I are gonna sit down with him, and if this makes sense, then we're gonna become cheerleaders for other businesses to do this, and we're gonna demonstrate to them why this makes financial sense. And if it does, then Bangor is gonna want to do it with other places. And so they did. They financed the whole thing. They've been fantastic to work with. And now Bangor is installing solar on 2 of their new buildings. They got one going on a marginal way in Portland. I think the other one might be in Brunswick. So, you know, you've got something that not only do I want to be a business leader, and obviously, you know, Phil Revision does too, but look, I can maybe change my world in a small little way. And you know this, having this radio show. But boy, wouldn't it be great to cheer some other folks on? So it's really fun.
In the last couple of minutes we have Aaron Anker here. He is one of the leaders of Grandiotes. You can go to their website, grandiotes.com, or social media at Grandiotes for both Twitter and Instagram. Talk about the business climate of Maine and the business climate in your category. According to the Organic Trade Association, that in the last year, overall organic sales have topped $35 billion. And I can only imagine that that's going up. As you mentioned, you know, all of the food grocery chains are adding organic sections, and there's greater expansion. And as millennials age and come into the marketplace, that there's certainly greater awareness. So it's a huge business category. You're competing in some ways against the the giants of Kellogg and General Mills. And so, number one, how do you see yourself at Grandiose competing against the giants? And then how do you see the business climate here in Maine being either positive or needing to be adjusted for you guys to have the best chance of success in the marketplace?
Yeah, you know, it's so true because often we're considered, you know, in Maine here, a big company. And I kind of chuckled to myself. I said, geez, we're a really small company when you look at the giants that you mentioned. And we do compete against them on the shelf at Hannaford, Whole Foods, et cetera. And a lot of these companies own other brands that Whole Foods, unless you're in the industry, you wouldn't know, are owned by the Kellogg's and the General Mills of the world. I've never looked at it like we compete against them, but I'm cool with the niche we have, right? I don't need to knock them out at the knees and take them down. I just need to carve out a nice little niche where we can create a good lifestyle business and grow it to the point where we can continue to grow our team and have a good time with it. So, you know,
but how do you preserve that? Because even Ben and Jerry's sold out to Unilever. And I don't know if a lot of people know that because they've still kept some of the iconic branding, and it's still Ben and Jerry's, and one of them is still involved day to day, and one of them I can't remember if it's Ben or Jerry's. So they still have the packaging, and they're still very, very active in terms of conservation issues and non-GMO issues. But they made a decision to sell out, and I can never fault an entrepreneur, a business owner doing. Taking care of your families, right?
Yeah, because I don't either.
How do you balance that? Because at some point, somebody, General Mills, you know, you're going to get a call. Hi, this is Bob. I'm with General Mills. We just want to come up. We like your product. How do you balance the interest and the ethos of caring about that schoolhouse, caring about Maine authenticity? Mm. Same thing with Tom's.
Sure.
And I think Tom's of Maine is another great example where, you know, they've had that, and Tom Chappelle did a great job and then sold that to Colgate.
Colgate,
and then Burt's Bees.
Sure.
So sooner or later, whether it's Burt's Bees with Burt and Roxanne doing that, or Tom doing Tom's of Maine, or Ben and Jerry. So at what point do you have to look at the business in a broader scale, and have you thought about that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. In the beginning, I think I thought about it too much. And what I've told myself for at least the last 10 years is it's not really worth thinking about because it takes your eye off the prize. And the eye off the prize is running a good, sustainable business that's profitable, that can pay its people what they deserve, and hopefully you make a good living in the process. And we're doing that. I'm also not a hypocrite. Look, if somebody offers you $1 billion, you're crazy to say that you wouldn't take it. I will say to you that Nat continually says when we've ever talked about this that he'd have to be paid a lot of money because he really enjoys his life and he wouldn't want to just give it up. And he also would want, and I know for myself, and I know Nat would feel this way too, I'd want to take care of the people that got us to that point where we got that call.
And so if you got the call, you could also take that money and continue to do good things and just channel it in a different area.
And I just want to say that I never frown upon somebody that does that. I mean, look at Fresh Samantha. I look at those guys and they did. They took care of a lot of people that started out with them. So I don't knock anybody, and I think that it's crazy to say that. I will tell you that that's not our intention at this point. We're growing a good business. We'll see what happens. I've got a line that I've been using lately, which is success is a problem I'd love to have.
Right.
And I'll worry about that when it happens. I mean, that's not to say we don't plan for success. It's just that, you know, you can't overfocus on it. And it's not the plan at this point. And we're having fun and we want to just keep growing. And, you know, last three years in a row, we've grown over 25%. So at what point do we become annoying enough to one of those companies? I don't know. At this point, I don't think we're even on the radar.
In the final minute, talk about what's in the future, because you have your core products and you've brought oatmeal, which I think is a great extension. Where are some of the natural extensions for organic granola business that lends itself? Is cold cereal in itself part of the extension? What is the product development?
That's a great question. We do have a pretty big portfolio of roasted nuts and trail mixes. If you go to any of the large natural food stores, you'll see in the bulk section, we do quite a different, you know, we've got a high antioxidant trail mix. We've got a nori roasted cashew, which you actually get nori, I should have mentioned them earlier, from the guys at Maine Sea Coats Vegetables. That'd be a great company for you to interview. Good people harvesting it right off the coast of Maine. You know, so we do a lot with nuts and trail mixes. I think that's going to be our next move. We do talk a lot about, you know, hot cereal, though, oatmeal. And with the gluten-free, we could do some gluten-free things. We're building a matrix right out now, just trying to figure out what to do. One of the nice things is because Nat and I own the business, we're not really in a rush, right? So we look at it and we say, well, let's do it right, as opposed to doing everything all at once. And we'll certainly keep you abreast of what we're going to be doing next. And but I think trail mixes will be coming out this spring. And then probably next fall, we'll be doing some more hot cereals. So.
And how much room for expansion do you have in the schoolhouse?
Yeah, we'll be able to. I mean, one thing, an existing facility will be about five times the volume. But we have so much property there that we could build, you know, annexes onto it to add on. That's kind of what we're thinking.
Well, I see that in the future. I see it as being the campus.
It'd be fun, wouldn't it?
It is fun. And clearly from talking to you in the last hour and looking at all this material, you and your partner, Nat, have a real passion, an authentic passion, both for the business and the organic nature. But I can tell, as somebody who started a couple of businesses myself, that if you don't have people with that type of passion that are willing to work sometimes till midnight or a new order comes in or a machine breaks down, you couldn't have the success you have today without doing that hundreds of times where a delivery truck didn't show up. You got to put something in your car. You don't want to let somebody down. And I think sometimes here in Maine and in a broader sense, people talk about entrepreneurship as being kind of like this automatic thing where people wake up and go, oh, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And it's more than that, because a lot of people want kind of that glory or that kind of self-reliant thing. But it is an unbelievable amount of work, and your work is never done. Your phone is, something happens at 4 a.m., something happens, electricity goes, something happens, an employee gets sick. It never ends. And for the success you have, please pass along my thoughts to Nat. For you guys to build this business and have such a what I think is a powerful brand is huge, huge credit to you and the folks that work with you up there.
Well, thanks so much. And, you know, I just want to tell you how important it is for us to be in Maine and that we do find hard workers here. I mean, some of the most real and hardest workers I've ever met in the country, and I have lived around the country, are here in Maine. We love being here. When we moved to Hiram, and actually in Brownfield too, we're the largest employer. You know, I tell that to my sales reps, you know, the guys that work for the distributors down in New York City, and they go, really? They go, well, what about the post office? And I said, yeah, they're only open a couple hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, this is it. So we're loving breathing some life into Hiram. The town's been excited, and I can't thank the state of Maine. Maine has just been so good to us. So it's been really great, and, you know, I love owning a business here in Maine. And you know what? We just keep making good business decisions, and that's what we do.
Well, thank you for coming in, Aaron, and we'd love to have you come back every once in a while and kind of keep us updated on what's going on.
I'd love to, Steve. I really enjoy this. It's a lot of fun.
And I encourage everyone. I've had their product in the past, but now that I have these four bags here of granola, four packages, and the oatmeal, this is breakfast tomorrow, the oatmeal. This is going to be Cammy's acai bowl. And encourage everyone, go to their website, learn about the product. Available at most Hannaford's, at Whole Foods, and GrandyOats.com. Great company here in Maine, and I wish you guys a lot of luck.
Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. You've been listening to Tide Sports Talk with Steve on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. We'll be back next week. Thank you.